This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Okay, welcome to the show. We are Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio, ESPN2, the ESPN app, SiriusXM, Channel 80, and all of our great ESPN stations across the country, along with Michelle Smallman, Aaron Rodgers' best friend, Chris Canty. I am Evan Cohen here on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio. Good morning, everybody.
What's happening, man? How did the Miami Heat do last night? I know you was courtside at the game. What's up? You see DJ Khaled and them? What happened?
See, why do we have to do that? Why do we have to immediately take a shot at the team?
The show with the Heat and the Sixers.
That's right. It was a big matchup.
We said that was the topic of conversation. Joel Embiid, second game back. We want to know. You had a chance to put eyes on it, man.
Very close eyes.
We want the first-hand account of what it looked like. When you guys blew the lead in the fourth quarter, when the Sixers ended the game on a 15-3 run. Oh. I just want to know what it felt like as you were sitting courtside.
Yeah, you see, I think the spin on this game was more on the Sixers' end. You seem to take a spin against the Heat. I'm a little confused as to why we have to bring up Miami. Miami has nothing to do with how good the Sixers were last night. Why do we have to do it that way?
Well, they allowed it.
Well, yeah, they allowed a couple of blown leads in that game.
They were down 17-2 to start the game, 12-0. So you have to give them credit on the comeback.
Yeah, they weren't down early in the second quarter. Early in the second quarter, they had a huge run early in the second quarter. And then it became the Tyrese Maxey Joel Embiid show.
And they were unbelievable. I'm going to tell you something right now, guys. In all seriousness, I don't think if I'm a Philadelphia 76er fan, Pat Costello, I don't think there's any playoff loss that you should be okay with. Not one.
Wow,
not against
really?
Any team. I think the Philadelphia 76ers are that good that when you've got both of you yesterday writing off the Bucks, you've got other people, CC and I specifically, questioning, let's see what Boston does in the postseason. You've got the Cavs sputtering. You've got Julius Randle out for the Knicks. Why can the Philadelphia 76ers not go to the NBA Finals, just out of curiosity? Like, why? They are so good. They play so hard. Embiid, like, is just so big and dominant whenever he wants to be. Maxey goes at 8,000 miles per hour, and they're insanely well coached by Nick Nurse. Why can't they be a finals team?
Well, there's that little team called the Boston Celtics that might have something to say about that, Evan.
I understand that, but I'm not sure that Philly's not better than them.
Go on.
I'm just telling you, I think the Philadelphia 76ers in a seven-game series, if 100% healthy, can beat the Boston Celtics.
But what
I don't even think that's a bold statement.
What about that matchup specifically do you think would be troublesome for Boston? Because they've been really dominant this season.
Joel Embiid. Like, I think we probably forget how good he is because of how bad he's been in the postseason relative to injuries and stuff like that. But, like, in general, I think the reality is that if this guy is healthy, I mean, he cannot be stopped. Kristaps Porzingis is tall and lanky. I get it. He's not stopping Joel Embiid. And as great as Derek White and Drew Holiday are defensively, I don't even know that when Maxey is healthy and ready to go, I don't know that he can be stopped. He's that good. I think they're awesome, and I would not be surprised if they went to the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. I mean, Tyrese Maxey really came into his own before he got hurt in the second half of this season. Like, you can see that there was a benefit from Joel Embiid being out of the lineup because it built that self-confidence for Maxey. And you saw that in the second quarter when the Sixers went on a 22-3 run after Miami had clawed back and taken a three-point lead. Like, for them to be able to do what they did, it took Tyrese Maxey being able to get his own shot, but also creating opportunities, generating points for others. And that's why Joel Embiid and Maxey combined to score or assist on 55 of the 63 first-half points, or 65 first-half points that the boys had in Miami last night, the Philadelphia 76ers. So I do think a big part of this is Tyrese Maxey and the growth, the evolution of his game. And if you look at all of the teams that are true title contenders, they have that guy that orchestrates the offense, that can break down the defense off the bounce, get his shot whenever he wants, but also create shots for others. And that's kind of been the missing element for Joel Embiid once this team has gotten to the postseason. They haven't had that guy that can consistently do that. Now, Tyrese Maxey's been there for a lot of those playoff disappointments, but that was a different version of Tyrese Maxey. I think this version of Maxey under head coach Nick Nurse, it creates a much more potent offense for the Sixers. Now, the one thing that I will say is a concern is Joel Embiid on the defensive end. Like, we all know that he's a good weak side defender, like in terms of being a rim protector, help side, like he can do those things. But you saw it a little bit last night. His lateral quickness isn't quite there. So when he's the primary defender and you got a big like Bam Adebayo that can put it on the deck, it's going to create some problems for Embiid in terms of the ability to be able to stay in front of him. I'm not sure if that's because of the brace. I'm not sure if that's just a meniscus injury playing a role overall. But that's the one area where I think the Sixers could get in a little bit of trouble if teams decide that they want to use their big to attack Joel Embiid. Because his lateral quickness might not be there, they could get him in some foul trouble. That could be a problem once you get into a playoff series. So something to watch. But overall, I mean, if you're a team in the Eastern Conference right now that fancies yourself as a contender, you do not want to see this Sixers team.
Oh, no doubt. You definitely do not. They're so dangerous in a lot of ways. I loved one thing that I should say that was really impressive to me last night is the fact that they turned on the Jets at the end for that 15-3 run, and they weathered that storm of runs by each team. Like at that point in the game, to be able to turn on the Jets, I think is really impressive, and that's what you want to see from a team who is a contender at this time this year. And Monica McNutt joined us yesterday, and she was talking about the different mentality entering these playoffs with the Philadelphia 76ers and Joel Embiid specifically. And it really got me thinking last night in watching this game, because not only is he healthy this time of year, which we have never really seen from him. He's been banged up by the time Philly gets to the playoffs. But when something is taken away from you, you appreciate it that much more and you're that much more driven to go get it. Not that Joel Embiid has not been motivated to win before or not been putting his all into it anymore. But when you have all of those playoff disappointments compounded with an injury like the one he had to deal with this season, I just think that there's a mentality and an edge to the 76ers, that team that might be a little different. And that's another reason I think that they're really dangerous come playoff time.
I wouldn't want them. I would not want them. CC is right. If you're Boston, you want no part of Philadelphia. If you're Milwaukee, I mean, it's what you guys said yesterday, I think is going to become commonplace with the Milwaukee Bucks at the two seed. If they play Miami or Philly in the first round, everyone's going to pick Miami or Philly. It's just going to happen. And I don't know, like, we'll wait and see on Miami because they're not fully healthy. Neither is Philadelphia. But Philadelphia, if they are healthy, that's a better team than Milwaukee. And I think Milwaukee still is good. I'm still one of the believers, but I don't know that I can pick them over Philadelphia. I will say this.
Well, you keep hope alive with Milwaukee, brother.
Yeah, I know.
You keep hope alive. At this point, I'm expecting them to be one and done.
Well,
like, it's a different thing to entertain that possibility, but I'm expecting Milwaukee to be one and done with as bad as it's looked. I mean, if you lose to the Wizards and the Grizzlies in back-to-back games, you can lose to anybody in the NBA. I mean,
that's
anybody.
True.
I mean, it's
true.
The last week of the regular season, and that's how you play it? Like, and if you look at the remainder of their schedule, they ain't got a lot of gimmies, Ev. I mean, the one game against the Toronto Raptors, and that's it. I mean, you got the Cavs. You got OKC. You got the Orlando Magic tied twice. You got the Knicks. I mean, good luck. It ain't easy. I don't expect Milwaukee to make it out of the first round of the playoffs. I also don't expect Milwaukee to be the two seed once the playoffs start.
Who do you think is going to be the two seed?
I think it's going to be the Orlando Magic. As crazy as it sounds, I think it's a year early for Jamal Mosley and Wagner and your boy Banchero. But the way the Magic are playing, and again, they got two head-to-head games against the Milwaukee Bucks, I think it ends up being the Orlando Magic.
Which
just shows you how wide open the Eastern Conference is and how dangerous this Sixers team could be.
Yes.
Like, if Joel Embiid continues to trend in the direction that he's trending, I mean, what, 29 points in 33 minutes last night?
He's not in shape yet. That's the other thing.
He's totally
out of shape.
Hey, he's not in shape, but the jumper is wet, though.
Oh my God. The jumper is wet.
You saw, you know, it. The jumper is wet.
I was thinking about that last night, CeCe. I'm glad you brought that up. I know the numbers may say 11 of 25 or whatever it was. Remember Karl Anthony Towns came out and said he's the best shooting big man of all time, and everybody's laughing at him and say, well, Dirk is. Well, Dirk is obviously better shooting than Karl Anthony Towns. Joel Embiid is one of the greatest shooting big men that has ever lived. His touch is unbelievable, and you saw it a little bit last night. The other thing that was interesting from the NBA last night, there's some like unsportsmanlike rules and regulations we're going to have to get into on this. So Tari Eason is a member of the Houston Rockets, okay? He's not playing currently. He's injured. And he's been wearing these Warriors come out and play shirts.
Huh.
And the Warriors and the Rockets were competing for the 10 seed. They play last night. The Warriors win this game. They've won six games in a row, 133-110. And they basically are wrapping up the playoffs to play, and the Rockets are going to be out. And for some reason, he keeps wearing these shirts. Klay Thompson post game didn't love it.
You guys heard the Warriors come out to play.
Yeah, that's pretty lame, especially if you're not even playing. Like, it's one thing if you're playing and you're out there competing and you can back it up, but if you're just going to be trolling from the sideline, like, bro, like, what are we doing? Like, times we talk mess, at least we're out there competing. I'm not going to, that's all I have to say about that.
All right, what are the rules here? If you're not playing in a game and you're on a team, can you troll or taunt the other team?
No.
Absolutely not.
No, you're not a part of the game, bro. Like, the only impact you have on the game is being a cheerleader for your teammates. You can't be trolling the other team and you not even in the game. Like, what is that? What part of the game is that, Smalls?
I don't know, but I'm with Clay. If you're going to wear a shirt like that, it better be in pregame warmups and you better be out on the floor ready to back it
up. No doubt.
Not only that, I know that this isn't the same version of the Warriors that we've seen in years past, but is this the team you really want to provoke?
Yeah.
Do you really want to poke that bear and upset Clay and Steph and the Golden State Warriors? Do you really want to give them extra motivation at all? I don't think so. It doesn't feel like a wise decision.
No, if this is the movie, the Warriors, the Houston Rockets didn't make it out of the Bronx. Like, they didn't make it out of the Bronx. It didn't go well for them. They didn't get back to Coney Island. Like, it's that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. That's like an all-time bad troll job. Like it feels like he's trolling himself, the fact that he would try to troll the other team knowing that he's not playing in the game. You're not in the game, dog. You on the bench. No impact at all. Doesn't make sense. I will say this, though, Ev, for Ime Udoka to come out after the game and say, we either scared or we soft, is two things that's not good for our club. I played a lot of ball. I ain't never had a coach post-game go to the podium and say, we either scared or we soft, two things that's not good for our club. He might have said that in the locker room to the team before the media gets in there, but I ain't never heard of a coach come out on the podium to the media and say, my team is either scared or we soft, two things that ain't good for us.
As a player, how would you react to that?
I mean, I get my issue with the coach, but Ime ain't just any typical coach. Like, he's a former player himself. Sure. That's a big man, dog. Like, you just ain't going to roll up on Ime Udoka any kind of way. And I'm just sitting there thinking about it. Like, that kind of edge is what you want your coach to have if you think your team is a championship contender. You want that. And I was thinking to myself, how much better would I feel about the Boston Celtics prospects if Ime Udoka was still the head coach? No, I'm serious. How much better would I feel about the Celtics if Ime was the head coach?
Probably a lot better.
A lot better. And I get it. The Celtics are leaps and bounds, record-wise, better than anybody in the Eastern Conference. Nobody believes in them. Everybody's like, wake me up when we get to the Eastern Conference Finals with Boston, because we want to see whether or not Mazzulla can do it. But I think that shows you the disparity between him and Ime Udoka.
A question very quickly here. Would you rather be labeled in life scared or soft?
Is there a door number three?
No.
Aren't they kind of the same?
You brought up the either or.
I want door number three. Either way, it's a problem. Either way, it's on site, Ev. It's on site. If somebody calls you scared or calls you soft, that is a direct challenge right there. And you got to find a way to deal with it.
That is disrespect. Yeah.
Like, when they say you scared or you soft, they mean that with all disrespect.
Yeah, they say it with their chest.
I can't give you a pass if you call me scared or soft.
I think I'd rather be called scared than soft, because
even
the toughest person can acknowledge that some situations or some competitions should be scary in some way. But to say that you're soft, that's how you react to something. Mm. And to me, that's more of a diss than saying that you're scared.
888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776 is the number to be a part of the show. We've now discovered the Ime Udoka game. Would you rather be labeled scared or soft? Plus, coming up, Final Four is today. ESPN has all the games, of course. The women's Final Four gets going today. Men's tomorrow. We will dive into that. Unsportsmanlike is presented by Progressive Insurance. Save when you bundle motorcycle, RV, and boat insurance. Visit Progressive.com for more information. We're Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's electricebikes.com.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Women's Final Four gets going today. The special tips off 6 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Then number 3 NC State, number 1 South Carolina, 7 p.m. Eastern, followed by semifinal number 2 with UConn and Iowa this evening, all on ESPN television. And as if the women's game didn't have enough endorsements of how great it's been, how about the greatest player in the NBA for the last 20 years endorsing how great women's basketball has been, LeBron James, all in on the ladies' Final Four?
I don't think there's much difference between the men and women game when it comes to college basketball. I think the popularity comes in is the icons that they have in the women's game. You know, you look at, you know, Angel Reese, you look at, you know, Juju, you look at Caitlin Clark, you look at Paige. You look at the young girl that's in Iowa State, the freshman there. You look at Brink, I believe her last name is, at Stanford. And that's just to name a few. The freshman that's at Notre Dame, because they are not allowed to go to the NBA, you're able to build, you know, like a real, like, iconic legacy out of program. And that's what we all love about it. You know, that's what we all love, and we love the girls' game because of that moment. You actually get to see those girls. That's what make the Final Four and the Elite Eight so great.
Well, Caitlin Clark, while in Cleveland, heard these comments getting ready for the Final Four and had this to say about LeBron.
Obviously, I've seen he's commented about myself, and I just saw this morning he talked about women's basketball in general and how good the game is and the stars in our game, and he knows what he's talking about. He pays attention. You know, he supports the game. He doesn't just talk about it. Like, he really shows up and supports, and I think that's the coolest thing. One of the greatest players of all time, really helping support and grow women's basketball. Like, that's exactly what we need. So he's somebody I've always idolized. So it's cool to be in Cleveland and play here, a place where his career started, and he was able to do so many amazing things.
I mean, that's pretty awesome hearing this, the way that we hear from LeBron and then Caitlin Clark there.
Absolutely. And it is important that the icons in the NBA continue to speak out about how amazing women's basketball is and elevate them. Kobe did it back in the day. The fact that LeBron is doing it now, it is important for them to acknowledge not only that the star power is there, but that the game is there, that they enjoy watching the style of play and the style of basketball. But what LeBron said, I feel wholeheartedly. Part of the reason why we've seen this explosion in growth is because these women are staying in college longer, and we are getting to be connected to them and watch their growth and watch their journey. And part of sports is being emotionally connected to someone. And we are with the women now in a way that we haven't been in a long time with the men's game.
Absolutely. It's about character development. We know who the heroes and the villains are because we've seen them in those respective roles for 2, 3, 4 years in some cases. So I think that's a big part of why we have this affinity for the women's game. Now, beyond that, just fundamentally how they play the game of basketball, perpetual motion, constant movement, the intensity, it's just different. There aren't really a whole lot of lulls in the action when it comes to the women's game. And so I think there's an appreciation for that as opposed to seeing some of the things from the men's game, especially when you have programs that feature the one-and-done players. It's more about pick and rolls. It's about iso ball, one-on-one, whereas when you're sharing the basketball, when everybody's engaged, when everybody's touching the ball, it makes a difference in terms of the style that's aesthetically pleasing for a lot of the fans that are sitting at home. So I do think that there's a part of the brand in the women's game that lends itself to being able to draw us in and provide a little more entertainment value. So I do think it's the characters, but it's also the brand of ball that they're playing.
Mm-hmm. How many stars are we looking at this weekend with both? Because I'm just going through this right now. And Caitlin Clark, I think, is the biggest star playing in the men's or women's game right now, right?
I
think, and I'm including coaches in this just because in college, the coaches usually are the biggest stars. Dawn Staley feels like a star to me.
No doubt.
Gino Auriemma is a star. Paige Becker's of UConn a star. So I have four on the women's side. Am I leaving anybody out in terms of stars for this weekend in the Final Four?
Camila Cardoza is a star.
Yeah.
Okay, Camila Cardoza. So we have five for the women's game. Men, this is where I think the debate comes in. Danny Hurley feels like he's becoming a star. I think it's also because of the name's been around for so long. You know, his dad was a high school coach forever. Woj wrote a great book about him. His brother obviously playing at Duke and now a coach as well. So I have Danny Hurley, Donovan Klingon, who is a guest on our show this week, the UConn Center, DJ Burns of NC State, and Zach Edey of Purdue.
Now, is I don't DJ know Burns that all a star? Of,
well, that's the thing. I don't know. That's the question, CeCe. I don't know how to define stars. It does feel like we have more this weekend than normal, at least in recent years. But I think there's some debate on some of the names I just brought up.
But who knew DJ Burns' name before the ACC tournament?
Well, that's what I was going to say. He's a tournament star. I don't think he's a star, period. Whereas on the women's side, these are figures and names that we have known consistently for a while.
Yeah.
DJ Burns is a tournament star, and the NCAA tournament breeds those every year.
So we have three then on the men's side, are we saying? Hurley, Klingon, and Edey? Matt Painter, Kevin Keats, these guys are not stars. I mean, they're known guys. I mean, Keats, we've talked about ad nauseum. He almost lost his job this season, right? So, and then the contract extension was one that was triggered, not offered, because of the amount of winning. Are there any other stars on the men's side that we're missing here?
To that level of the group that you just gave us, probably not.
Yeah, I was about to say, Nate Oates got a bag, but I don't know that he's a star coach in college basketball.
He's becoming a name that's more. I might put him in Nate the Oates, tournament star category because people are becoming more familiar.
He's right there.
People became aware of him because of the tournament, and now they know he coached in high school not that long ago. Yeah. They start to know things about him. But prior to this tournament, I don't know how many people knew who Nate Oates was.
Well, now he's a friend of the show.
Yeah, we love
that.
People knew him because he came on Sportsman Live.
Absolutely. Exactly. No doubt.
Yeah. And based on that, I'm just throwing this out there. Donovan Klingon and Nate Oates seem like the two biggest stars in the world, actually, as a matter of fact. You can listen to our podcast and find both of those. So basically what we're saying is we're getting ready for the Final Four this weekend. It is clear that the men's game actually has some stars, but not even close to the women's game right now. The women's game is just littered with stars in terms of the players and the coaches, which is awesome. Tonight, 6 p.m. Eastern, it all gets going. 7 p.m. tip-off. NC State, South Carolina, all on ESPN.
Ev, let me ask you a question. Does tonight's game between UConn in Iowa, does it do a bigger number than we saw Iowa LSU? Does it do a bigger number than 12 million viewers?
No.
It doesn't do a bigger number?
A Friday night is hard to compete with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because of the rivalry aspect of LSU-Iowa and Angel Reese-Caitlin Clark, that is an unmatched combo of star power on the women's side. Mm-hmm. I don't think we'll see a number past 12
million. I couldn't believe that number, Iowa-LSU, was bigger than the average viewership for Thursday Night Football this past regular season. Wow.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, my. I didn't see that set. That is unbelievable. Yeah. Now, the question becomes, Sunday, if it's Iowa, South Carolina, Caitlin Clark against an undefeated South Carolina team, does that beat 12.3?
That's going to put up some numbers.
That's going to put up numbers. Yeah, if it's Iowa, South Carolina, that's going to do numbers.
That's
going to do numbers.
Her versus an entire undefeated team.
Yeah.
And this is her last opportunity to win a title. That's going to pull numbers big time.
Well, let's see the numbers that Canty versus the World pulls next. It's on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Aaron Rodgers, a major topic of conversation yesterday all across ESPN Radio. Why? Because of the fact that 2 days ago, let me get my math right on this. Maybe 2 or 3 days ago, CC wrote them off saying they're done for this season. Don't even expect them to do anything this year. Mm-hmm. Then Greeny comes back, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern time here on ESPN Radio, and says, that's not fair, a little too soon. Rodgers is a good leader. I believe, I am assessing CC's assessment, that word leader is the thing that really threw you off. I think he could have made the argument in a way without that word that would not have thrown you off. And then yesterday, we take you back to a show called Unsportsmanlike. That show airs 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN 2, ESPNU. You guys should listen more if you're not already listening for all 4 hours. Please do. Go back and get the podcast if you'd like. Chris Canty had this to say about Aaron Rodgers as a leader.
That's the problem with Aaron Rodgers. He limits what your franchise can do or what they're willing to do because he's basically taking control of your franchise. This guy is a cancer that's metastasized throughout the entire building in Florham Park. And I don't know why Jets fans can't see it. That's why I said your season is over before it starts. It's not about your talent. It's about what Aaron Rodgers makes your franchise. He is a culture killer. And because, from a production standpoint, he's not the same guy that he was 3 or 4 years ago when he won back-to-back MVPs, the juice ain't worth the squeeze. But guess what? Sometimes you got to learn things the hard way, and Jets fans are going to relearn that this season. 2023 wasn't a fluke.
Yeah, I had a major issue with what CC said because I don't know what the word metastasize or whatever that word is.
I don't know how to spell it. I know how to use it. I don't know how to spell it.
It means it's growing rapidly.
It means it's spread. Okay. Yeah, spread and grow rapidly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, a little too hard for me, just to be clear. It's way too smart for me to understand that. But Molly Karam, Stephen A. Smith, and Kimberly A. Martin did understand what CC was saying and had this response on First Take yesterday.
This is what I deduced, essentially, from what Canty's saying, that Aaron Rodgers cares more about Aaron Rodgers than he does the team.
Okay.
So his decisions are at the expense of the team.
Okay. And I'm saying to you, that's absolutely right, and you have a big-time point. If Aaron Rodgers is on the field and all of this is happening, we can't knock Aaron Rodgers for wanting what he wants. If he was on the field, then the level of productivity would have been higher. That's all I'm saying. Chris Canty, if the New York Jets, with Aaron Rodgers healthy, had gone to the playoffs last year, mm-hmm. would Chris Canty have been able to say that?
No.
That's my point.
But it's not even about him not playing. First of all, what he's talking about is the Aaron Rodgers we saw in Green Bay. The Aaron Rodgers we've seen in Florham Park has looked like a different guy from a leadership standpoint. Yes, I understand he only played 4 snaps of last season. But as somebody who was at training camp, we've been to training camp where we have experience being around this team and seeing the difference in how, not just practice, but how the building feels. When I've talked to Quinnen Williams, Garrett Wilson, Sauce Gardner, like Breece Hall about the type of guy Aaron is, they are all in. So I hear what Canty is saying about Aaron Rodgers, like why are the Jets beholden to him? Because they have not seen a quarterback this talented and we don't know how long. That is why, and because they haven't figured it out any other way. Basically, you're putting all your chips in for Aaron Rodgers, and I'm good with that. This team on paper could win the AFC East and it could contend for a Super Bowl on paper. But I think Chris was a bit too harsh for me.
Okay, so CC, we need your response to you talking, Greeny responding, you responding, and First Take responding. Now we need your response to that, CC. Go ahead.
I feel like I'm in middle school right now. A lot of he said, she said, right? Yeah. But here's the thing, and I think Kmart is conflating two things, right? Because she said it's a different feel in the building at Florham Park. You know why it's a different feel? Because the guys on the defensive side of the ball know they got a competent quarterback. So they're excited about what the team can be if Aaron Rodgers just goes out there and he's average. Because the bar to clear when it comes to quarterback play in Florham Park has been so low. Think about what Zach Wilson has been. Think about what Sam Darnold was before that. Think about Trevor Siemian and all the other backup quarterbacks that have rolled through there. The guys on the defensive side of the ball in training camp were excited because, you know what? We got a competent quarterback, a guy that knows what the hell he's doing. But here's the problem when it comes to the Rodgers of it all. His ego gets in the way of decisions that could potentially help your football team. Here's what I mean by that. His ego is why Nathaniel Hackett is the offensive coordinator. And when Aaron Rodgers ain't operating the offense, what does that mean for the production for your offense? What does that mean for your team scoring points in the regular season? Not great. Not great. So Stephen A. is talking about it's different if Rodgers is on the field because we can talk about what his impact is. No, he ain't got to be on the field for this dude to impact what the organization is doing. Think about it. The organization in the first half of the season, they knew that they were going to have to deal with a season without Rodgers. And yet they decide they're going to roll with Zach Wilson and Tim Boyle and Trevor Siemian as the quarterbacks, as opposed to exploring any backup options. How about calling the Arizona Cardinals and seeing what Josh Dobbs could do? How about calling Joe Flacco and see what he's doing while he's hanging out on the couch? These are all possibilities that they could have explored, but they didn't want to bring in those guys or go after any other options because of the fragility of Rodgers' ego, and we saw that on display the last couple of years in Green Bay. And while we're at it, since we're talking about such a leader, a good leader that Aaron Rodgers is, what happened the last couple of off seasons in Green Bay? Think about the lurch that he left that team in, not communicating with the coaching staff, the front office. Think about how that all played out. The ominous cloud that was hanging over the Green Bay Packers. Think about what they were in 2022 when they had a Week 18 winning in game against the Detroit Lions. Detroit had nothing to play for. And Aaron Rodgers fell flat. And then think about what the Packers were this year after the Aaron Rodgers cloud was lifted. And how they became the youngest playoff roster in 50 years. And how Jordan Love has ascended into being a top 10 quarterback. Look, we keep talking about, oh, Rodgers' leadership abilities. It's great for the New York Jets. It's a breath of fresh air. You know who else it was a breath of fresh air for? The people in Green Bay. They couldn't wait to get rid of him. They couldn't wait. Oh, since we're at it, such a great teammate and everybody loves him. How did Devontae Adams feel at the end in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers? How was that? Devontae Adams, one of the best players in the NFL, couldn't wait to get away from Aaron Rodgers. Couldn't wait. I'm going to go to the Vegas Raiders. The damn quarterback that I thought was there was only there for a year, and they got rid of him. I couldn't wait to get out of Green Bay because he got tired of the Rodgers roller coaster. That's where we're at. But having Aaron Rodgers in your organization means also bringing along the friends. And those guys are taking up roster spots. Guys like, I don't know, Randall Cobb and Alan Lazard, who you paid $11 million a year and was a healthy scratch in the regular season. Tim Boyle, because he was a backup to Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. How'd that work out for you? Billy Turner, backup offensive lineman. Yeah, we'll give him a check too. Like, having Aaron Rodgers in your building means taking on all of the baggage that comes along with him. And based on what we think the player will be moving forward, I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze. If he's a guy that's going to go out and throw 37 tutties and only have four picks like he did in 2021, okay, cool. But how can you expect him to be that guy going into his age 40 season coming off of an Achilles injury, Smalls?
I don't know that you can. You hope that he will be that, but I don't think that you can guarantee it in any way, shape, or form. And I also think there's one part of the argument against what you said that we need to really highlight. Everyone is pointing out in the preseason and training camp that the vibe was different, that Aaron Rodgers was a great leader, and they have not seen the Jets players or the team as a whole respond to somebody like that in a long time. And I will give Aaron Rodgers that. In the offseason, training camp, beginning of the season, he was the consummate teammate. He was a great leader for all intents and purposes. We can give him his flowers for that. But I also can't forget what happened after he went down four plays into the season. How are we just going to wash over that and pretend like it didn't happen? When Joe Burrow went down, was he a distraction to his team? No. Was Kirk Cousins a distraction to his team? No.
No, they were up in the press box cheering their teammates on.
Supporting their team from a distance and in the locker room when they needed to be, etc.
No doubt.
But Aaron Rodgers did nothing but cause paranoia and drama with the New York Jets after he went down. We know that he's going out and he's making these comments to our Pat McAfee. We hear all these reports about how that stirred things up with the Jets. Rob Saleh wants to check people's phones.
Yeah.
He's keeping the team in purgatory saying, I'm going to be back. I know it's never been done before. I'm going to be back. You just want. How is the team supposed to dedicate themselves to the quarterback they have and know what's happening when Aaron Rodgers publicly every week is coming out saying, I'm going to be back. You just watch. You just wait. He was holding them hostage in so many ways saying, I'm I'm going to be back, when in reality, he never was. How is that leading to a positive environment within the Jets? How is that a good leader when you're not even out on the field, yet you're making sure that everything revolves around you?
Yeah, the narcissist in him would say, yeah, I'm providing hope for my teammates to keep these guys playing. I'm dangling the carrot of me being back, knowing that I won't, so those guys can continue to play hard. That's the narcissist in Aaron Rodgers. And I don't know how you can vault somebody into a leadership role like the quarterback position is, knowing the personality traits that he has and what was on display at the end in Green Bay. I don't know why Jets fans, people that analyze this thing for a living, think the Jets will be markedly better. The guy has never been good in terms of being able to set the culture, set the agenda for a franchise. He's just been a really skilled player. He's been a really productive player. But I don't know that we're going to see him be that same player again, coming off of an Achilles injury in his age 40 season. And if he can't be that skilled and if he can't be that productive, then his ego is going to get in the way of anything good that this team can accomplish.
Coming up, a big trade in the NFL 2 days ago that was altered yesterday. What does it mean? We'll explain next. It's Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Steph Diggs is a member of the Houston Texans. That trade happens 2 days ago. Yesterday, our very own Adam Schefter added a really interesting note as part of this trade. The Texans and Steph Diggs agreed to wipe out the final 3 years of his deal to make him a free agent at the end of this year, to give him a bump in pay by about $3-plus million or so to $22.52 million guaranteed for this season. And I think this is very interesting, guys, on multiple levels, but two things jump out at me with this. Number one, the Houston Texans believe they can win the Super Bowl this year. That, to me, is what they're – not in years to come, this year. Because when you make a trade, you're giving up a second-round pick, and you're voluntarily saying, we are going to allow you to be a free agent at the end of the year and not have you for multiple years – means that they think they can win it all this year. Number two, they don't trust him. They don't trust him. They don't trust that he's going to be everything that they want him to be unless he's motivated to make $25 million next year versus $22 million this upcoming season. Those are my two takeaways from this. We'll see if I'm right in mentality. And oh, by the way, little asterisk, guys, on this. If it doesn't work out, they can trade him this year, and they're not on the hook past this year. What was your takeaway, guys, when you saw this from Schefter yesterday?
I thought this was really smart by general manager Nick Caserio from the Houston Texans, because you dangle the carrot of fresh cash out there as a motivator for Steph Diggs. So I think it's less about them not trusting him and more about wanting to get the best version of him on the field, right? Nothing motivates a guy like fresh cash. I say it all the time. Going into a contract year, knowing that there's a bag on the other side of it, if you produce, I think that lends itself to Steph Diggs being an impact player to the degree that everybody is saying he could, by giving C.J. Stroud a true number one wideout to go along with Nico Collins and Tank Dell and Dalton Schultz and Joe Mixon. So I like it. But here's the other thing, Av. If it does work out and say that they don't necessarily want to extend him long term, I mean, you do have the option of franchise tagging Steph Diggs. I didn't see anywhere in the restructure where they said they couldn't tag him in 2025. So I think that having Steph Diggs on a two-year proposition is brilliant, because those are the same amount of time that you have C.J. Stroud on his rookie contract. And so I think timing it out that way for Nick Caserio makes a whole lot of sense. Not being on a hook long-term for big money at the wideout spot makes a whole lot of sense. And so you're hoping that Steph Diggs' presence over the next year to 2 years can help vault C.J. Stroud into that rarefied air and put him as close to Patrick Mahomes as any other quarterback in the National Football League.
The details of this deal make me love it even more than I initially did. The fact that you were able to figure out a way to minimize your risk while potentially maximizing your reward here in so many ways, I think was so, so smart by the Houston Texans. If Steph Diggs comes over and it's not a fit, you're not on the hook for him for very long and you can move past him. Smart. Also, the fact that he isn't necessarily going to be there a long time, you do motivate and incentivize him to not only get the biggest production that he can, but the book on Steph Diggs in Minnesota and in Buffalo is that at sometimes he could be a bit prickly, right? This motivates him to fall in line with what the Houston Texans want, to really blend into that culture and maybe be a little deferential to them in some ways, which we didn't see sometimes in Buffalo and Minnesota. I don't think that this could be any better for the Houston Texans. I love this deal.
Yeah, and all the pressure is on Steph Diggs to make it work. There ain't a whole lot of pressure on the Texans to make it work, which is why it's even better, right? Because think about it. If he goes there and he balls out and the team has success, if the Texans are uncomfortable going where Steph Diggs wants the contract to go, well, what's Steph Diggs' alternative going to be? To turn himself into a pariah? To make himself untouchable? I mean, you can make a stink in Houston, but after making a stink in Buffalo and making a stink in Minnesota, who's going to be in a hurry to throw you a bag? Nobody. So in order for Steph Diggs to get what he wants out of the deal, he's got to get along and go along. And I think framing it that way by wiping out the final 3 years of that contract is masterclass when it comes to roster construction by Nick Caserio.
So let's look at it the other way then. I'm sure some people are listening to this guy saying, well, why would Diggs do this? Explain why Diggs would do this.
Because he has an opportunity to get another bite at the apple in his early 30s, right? Like, think about it. There are only so many contracts that you got in your NFL career, and he's going into his age 31 season. And so there is the potential for him to get one more big bite of the apple, one more 3 or 4 year deal where he's making top of the market money. That's why you would do it if you're Steph Diggs. If I can get back to the table, then all of a sudden I can get to where Mike Evans and all of these other receivers are at with that $25 to $30 million a year range as opposed to making $20 million. I think he's making $22.5 million this year. So I can still get another contract where I'm making $25 million or more per year on a 3 or 4 year proposition with a huge signing bonus. That's why you would do it if you're Steph Diggs. It's not necessarily the size of the contract that you sign all the time. It's how many contracts can you sign while you're in the heart of your prime? And I think that's what Steph Diggs' motivation is, to wipe out the remaining years on that contract.
All right, 888-SAY-ESPN is your telephone number to join the show. We've been asking you guys the question. Ime Udoka said about the Houston Rockets last night, we were either scared or soft. Which one would you rather be labeled, scared or soft? Eric and Compton listening on 710 ESPN in L.A.
Hey, how y'all doing?
What's up, Eric?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, yes. First of all, if you don't mind, don't hang up on me. I do want to say something that's praiseworthy to you guys. First of all, I don't know how anyone you look, but the first thing, when I first heard you guys on the radio, I was blown away. Y'all are awesome. Y'all better never break up. Don't ever break up.
Thank you.
Okay, now, I'm not trying to put it out there, but I'm a homeless guy, but you better not be scared. You better not be scared. You're going to be homeless, don't be scared. You've got to have heart. So if you're soft, people got to find that out.
Well, you know what, Eric, and thank you for the call. We have 10 seconds. I have about a million questions. So the homeless guy is listening every day and has a cell phone. Good job, I think. What just happened here? We're on Sportsman Life.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.